Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. At colleges and university campuses across the country, students are protesting the war in Gaza. They're calling on their school administrations to take action with the tools they have, like their endowments. Protester demands include divesting from companies doing business in Israel, cutting ties with schools in Israel, and giving immunity to protesters. The responses from school administrations have varied widely. Some have struck deals with the protesters, like at Northwestern and Brown. Others have forcibly removed encampments or canceled their graduation ceremonies. The University of Vermont has canceled its commencement speaker, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. We'll hear more about the protests and responses at UVM and Middlebury later in the hour. There have also been mass arrests. At least 25 people were arrested on Saturday at the University of Virginia. At Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire, 90 people were arrested last Wednesday, including history professor Annalise Orlek.
The protest was entirely peaceful. It was loving. It was interfaith. There were Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and Buddhist practitioners, and I think even chaplains there. And it really was the consummate example of a peaceful, diverse protest. Once the riot police were called in, it became something else very, very quickly. And so it seems to me wildly out of proportion that 90 people were arrested. It seems wildly overkill that anyone was arrested.
We'll hear more from Annalise Orlek in a bit. We're also going to speak to other professors, student at UVM, and the head of UVM's Hillel chapter. Joining us now is Frances Mize. She's a Valley News reporter who's been covering the protests at Dartmouth College and is going to bring us an update. Frances, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Now, as we said, 90 people were arrested at Dartmouth on Wednesday evening. What has the mood been like on campus since that major event?
Yeah, if you drive by the green this morning, where the arrest took place, it would be hard to recognize that there was a mass detainment there on Wednesday night. People are just sort of hanging out there with their friends and playing spike ball. But certainly elsewhere, petitions are circulating asking for the college to drop the charges against the students and against Professor Orlek and other demonstrators involved, asking the college to revise its dissent policy such that it would not call in police for peaceful protests. Counter petitions have also been circulating, commending President Sean Bylock and the college administration for, quote, her thoughtful and strong leadership in these complex times and for their resolve to keep Dartmouth a safe space for all. That's undersigned by more than 50 faculty members. So the response has been mixed.
There's still a lot of debate on these topics. What happened leading up to the arrests on Wednesday? Were there attempts to get the encampments taken down before police and state troopers showed up?
Yeah, so once a handful of tents were set up, a liaison between the college and the protesters started handing out these yellow slips that warned protesters that if they did not leave the green, they would be subject perhaps to arrest, and said that they were in violation of college policy. Then safety and security officers, Dartmouth safety and security officers, started spreading that same message to protesters. And shortly thereafter, in a visually striking scene, about 20 New Hampshire state troopers in tactical gear walked down from the northwest corner of the green from behind the library and lined the side of the green that stands in front of that's in front of Dartmouth Hall, which is the one of the iconic white traditional buildings on campus, sort of backdropped by blue flashing police lights and announcing that that if the demonstrators didn't move, they would be arrested.
And what exactly were the charges against the people who were arrested? What were they arrested for?
They were arrested. Some were arrested for misdemeanor criminal trespassing. Others, as I understand it, for resisting arrest. There was sort of a medley of charges.
We're speaking right now with Valley News reporter Frances Mize, who has been covering the protest movement at Dartmouth College in Hanover. Again, let's hear a little bit more from Annalise Orlek, who's a history professor who has taught at the college for more than 30 years. She's also the co-chair of the college's program in women's, gender, and sexuality studies. I talked to her this morning by phone, and here is what she told us about her experience of the arrests.
They, without warning, knocked me from behind. I was body checked, body slammed by one or two or more of these body armored riot cops hard enough that I actually was lifted off my feet for a few feet and landed at the feet of the protesters. And when that happened, they took my phone because I had been videotaping student arrests. Three of them held me down, one with a knee on my back, and the other person zip tied me. And it was painful. It was frightening. And we were all zip tied in painfully tight ways. And many people ended up with nerve damage.
Orlek said they were then taken to holding cells in Lebanon, Hanover, Manchester, and Haverhill. Frances, is this account similar to what you heard from other people who were arrested?
Definitely. I spoke with two reporters from Dartmouth's student newspaper who were also arrested. Alessandra Gonzalez was arrested. She said when she was documenting the arrest of Professor Orlek, Charlotte Hampton, the other reporter, was arrested when she said, quote, "Don't take her. She's a member of the press," referring to Alessandra, her colleague at the student paper. I also spoke with Andrew Teft. He is a former Hanover resident who was in town visiting his dad. He sort of just wound up, as I understand it, on the green as the protests were happening. And as he was arrested, his encounter with police resulted in his broken shoulder.
Hmm. And we did reach out to Dartmouth ahead of this conversation and invited President Bylock to join us on today's show. A spokesperson declined on behalf of the president and shared the statement that was issued on Thursday morning, the day after the arrest. The statement read in part, I'm quoting here, "Protest and demonstration are important forms of speech, yet we cannot let differences of opinion become an excuse for disrupting our amazing sense of place and the lived experience of our campus. And most importantly, our opinions, no matter how strong they are held, can never be used to justify taking over Dartmouth's shared spaces and effectively rendering them places only for people who hold one specific ideology. This is exclusionary at best, and at its worst, as we have seen on other campuses in recent days, can turn quickly into hateful intimidation where Jewish students feel unsafe." Frances, have you made any other contact with the administration? Any updates to the statement that was released on Thursday?
No. Well, as far as there was a pretty vocal call to drop the charges, particularly against the student journalists. I did hear from a college spokesperson that those charges would not be dropped. The college would not be asking prosecutors to drop those charges. Quote, "We stand behind their right to vindicate that belief through the legal process," that belief being their commitment to documenting the demonstration, despite the risk of arrest. I think, as was mentioned at the beginning of this program, as colleges cancel graduation ceremonies, such as USC and Columbia, all eyes will be on Dartmouth commencement, which is scheduled for June 9th.
Let's go to the phones here. We have a call from Bob in Rutland. Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask you, of course, recently across the country in over 25 states, the American Legislative Exchange Council worked with legislatures to get laws that changed the definition of dissension and the definition of rioting so that basically in some states, gatherings alone are considered, you know, a criminalized dissension or rioting. You could be just standing there singing. And I just wanted to know what your opinion was on some of these changes that have been made.
Mm. Well, thank you, Bob. Personally, I'm not aware of those changes and if they have happened in Vermont and New Hampshire. Perhaps somebody listening does and can call in and let us know. Frances Mize, are you aware of any changes to laws about the definition of rioting and dissension that could have affected how police responded on Wednesday?
I'm not. I do think a question that I have heard asked by a number of people is what exactly is being criminalized here? Is it the dissent? Is it the trespassing? Especially in what happened at Dartmouth on Wednesday, there remains some ambiguity as to the charges.
Well, on that note, let's hear one more clip from my conversation with Professor Annalise Orlek, telling us what she heard from arrested students while they were being held.
Instead of coming out on the green for a couple of hours to support the encampment and chant a little bit and go home and do their work, they were violently wrenched out of that. And the college's refusal to ask the DA to drop charges has meant that they're going to be facing these charges, as will I, for months, if not longer. If that's not disruptive of the education process and wildly more extreme ways than a little peaceful rally, I don't know what else to say.
And Vermont Edition did, again, reach out to Dartmouth College yet again this morning to ask for a response to Annalise Orlek's questions there. We did not get a response from them in time for today's show. Let's go back to the phones. We have Merrick in Burlington on the air. Merrick, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi, what's your question or your comment?
Hi, so my name's Merrick Broderick. I am a Burlington City Councilor as well as a junior undergrad at the University of Vermont. I am a participant in the UVM Gaza Solidarity Encampment, and I have also received a charge from my university for my conduct at the encampment.
Received a charge. Can you say more?
Yes. So me, along with multiple other students, a disproportionate amount of them, students of color, have received charges from our university, meaning disciplinary proceedings are active. We are going to be having disciplinary hearings in the coming days, basically for a variety of things. Some of those including failing to identify ourselves and impeding investigation. Some people, including myself, who received that charge, were not even present to identify ourselves at the encampment. Trespassing upon, forcibly entering, or otherwise proceeding into unauthorized areas of the university. That would be being on the green at the time of the encampment, whether or not you were in a tent, whether or not you set up a tent. It was a very shotgun blast kind of proceeding where students who their only charge is just existing on the green of the university, and I believe that is ridiculous and frivolous to put our students through that. These are my constituents. These are my fellow students, and we are peacefully protesting. It's wrong, and I'm horrified about what happened at Dartmouth and across the country. And I'm very proud of my fellow students for remaining strong and fighting for divestment. We were able to get our speaker at the commencement speech canceled, and very soon we will be rallying for amnesty at the UVM encampment at 2 p.m. today.
It's Merrick Broderick, a UVM student and Burlington City Council member representing Ward 8. Merrick, thanks for calling in and telling us about that. We're also going to hear later in the hour from a student reporter for the Cynic at UVM, as well as the president of UVM's chapter of Hillel, an organization that represents Jewish students on campus. Frances Mize with Valley News. To wrap up here, what are you going to be focusing on in the days and weeks ahead? Where is your reporting taking you next?
I'll definitely be following up with this coalition of faculty members that is organizing demands directed at the college to signal to drop these charges. I understand that there has been a pretty overwhelming response to that petition. So I'll be keeping my eyes on that. And then, just like I said, as commencement approaches, we'll see how Dartmouth handles that very public meeting of its community.
Frances Mize with Valley News, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to following your reporting on this topic.
Thanks for having me, Michaela.
We just heard an update on what's been going on at Dartmouth College in Hanover, New Hampshire. Now we're going to turn to Vermont. Now, in a statement released just minutes before this show, just before noon today, Middlebury College students, administrators, and faculty finalized a document titled A Commitment to Common Educational Values, in which they outline some shared values and steps the college is taking to move this mediation process forward. The college says they plan to open up access and share information about their investments regularly with students. The statement also says that students are going to be taking down the encampment at Middlebury. It goes on to say that there is, quote, an expressed hope that such open debate can continue and with a commitment to a safe and joyful graduation. Joining me now to discuss what's been going on at Middlebury and more broadly is Linus Owens. He's an associate professor of sociology at Middlebury College, and his areas of research include social movements and protests. Linus, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Michaela. Yeah,
so glad to have you here with us. Now, you study social movements like what we're seeing at campuses all across our region and the country. First, have you also been part of the protests at Middlebury in a personal capacity, or are you approaching this from an academic perspective?
Well, I guess those aren't mutually exclusive, but I will say that this time I haven't been particularly active, partially because I live in Burlington and there's a lot of being around that's required with this kind of encampment. So I'm part of a faculty support group for the students, and so I'm aware of what's going on, but my actual involvement has been limited just because of my own personal things rather than actively avoiding it.
Now, we just got this hot off the presses update from Middlebury, but tell us before that, you know, this morning, this weekend, last week, what has the scene been like at Middlebury with the encampment, the conversations, the tenor on campus?
Well, I think it's been fairly dramatically different than a lot of the other things that are campuses that are making the news or being made into news. And I think you know, and the first time I was on Vermont Edition, it was because I was critical of the way Vermont Middlebury handled student protests. But this time, I think their willingness to listen to students and not to crack down immediately, I think, shows a real positive example of what's possible. Particularly, you know, in the long run, even following the statement, we're not sure to what extent those demands will be met in the long run. But I do think that their willingness to sit down and take the students seriously rather than treat them as an annoyance or worse shows that there's a possibility to find some kind of common ground. Because I do know that the students, as negotiating partners, were willing to compromise on some points, willing not to on other points. So the kind of framing as of these student activists as, sort of hard-headed ideologues who are unwilling to meet anyone sort of halfway, I think is a really a misrepresentation of what's going on at Middlebury, but I think further too.
You just referenced the last time you were on Vermont Edition, which was in 2017 when there was a protest and debate over a speaker coming to campus, Charles Murray. Could you summarize what happened then and any overlaps to the conversations that have been going on around free speech on campus today?
Well, the short version is that there are lots of students who are not particularly happy with Charles Murray coming to campus. Charles Murray, sort of known for advocating race science and IQ science that, I don't know, actively racist. And students weren't keen on having him on campus for various reasons, partially because, you know, to the extent that he offered anything to conversations around that, it was not helpful and untrue. And so students organized a protest to try and effectively drown him out in the protest so that people couldn't hear him. The college made arrangements so that the talk could go on elsewhere, but students were rounded up. There was a huge number of students who were punished or at least threatened with punishment. And Middlebury kind of blew up as this example of students out of control, students wanting to suppress free speech. And so to the extent that there's a link, I mean, definitely free speech is an issue, but it's, to me, the interesting thing is that it's being wielded in very different ways against, in some ways, the same kind of students and the same kind of practices, whereas before the students were being treated as kind of the threats to free speech. Now, their free speech is being seen as the threat. Hmm. And so I think that it highlights just how flexible people's commitment to free speech and maybe on these issues. And so I think that there's a continuation, even though the way it plays out is quite different.
Hmm. Let's go to the phones. We have a number of calls coming in. So I'll ask folks who are participating in this conversation by phone to, as always, be respectful. And if you can, be brief and direct so we can include as many voices as possible. Let's go to Todd in Northfield first. Todd, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to point out the strange coincidence that that so many of these arrests are happening right around the anniversary of the Kent State massacre. And it's disappointing to me that it seems that no one's learned their lesson here. The Dartmouth University in particular, it's egregious. But I will say, on the other hand, because there's always two sides to a story, a lot of what went wrong at Kent State had to do with people who weren't students. And I admonish people who aren't students at these universities to go home and organize their own protests in their own neighborhoods and not create extra trouble. They're very often the people that don't behave. Hmm.
Todd, I'm gonna jump in here just to provide some context for listeners. The Kent State massacre, that was the killing of four people and wounding of nine, all unarmed college students, by the Ohio State Guard on the Kent State University campus in 1970. Linus Owens, this protest movement is being compared to the protests of the Vietnam War in the 60s and 70s on campuses. And back then, the National Guard was called in to quell these uprisings, sometimes, as it can state, to disastrous effect. Has the National Guard ever been called into a campus in our region that you're aware of?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I'm not a native Vermonter, so I don't have extensive history. But as far as I know, I can't think of any examples. Just to pick up on a couple of points that Todd made.
Yeah.
I mean, there's this Kent State thing, and of course, with Columbia, there's the echoes of the protest in 1968. And certainly, there's similarities between the anti-war movement of 50 years ago and what's going on now, although this is a much earlier in process, not quite as widespread. So we'll have to see where things go from here. But I do think two points that Todd makes that I think are important is one is, and this goes back to your interview with the professor from Dartmouth, their experiences there, just the disproportionate response in terms of meeting a student protest that, yes, even if we grant that they are in violation of certain college policies, college policies get violated all the time. And it's rarely the police get called in and rarely people are arrested. I mean, historically, we can see that protest compared to a lot of other things, not just on campus, but beyond, tends to be over-policed and over-punished given the actual violations, trespassing, or, you know, all these relatively small violations, even if we grant that those are actually happening, which I don't think we should necessarily, because I think the police are not necessarily the most accurate storytellers of what happens, that they're relatively minor offenses that would rarely warrant arrest, let alone sort of the kind of violent crackdown. I do want to be a little bit careful with the outside agitator narrative. Not that there isn't examples of people from off campus getting involved, but I do think that, again, we can see this in the New York example around Columbia, that often the language of outside agitator gets linked with professional activists or terrorists or some kind of professionalization, which makes it seem like a much bigger, more serious thing that justifies the kind of crackdown that we see. And so, and plus, ultimately, one of the issues that makes college campuses so great is that they're open and people can come and go. And so, like, policing those boundaries between students and non-students, I think, is not helpful, ultimately. And I think that language ultimately benefits the people who are justifying the crackdown more than anyone else.
Let's go to the phones here. We have Rachel in Montpelier on the line. Rachel, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much. My comment here is really for the college students who are in these encampments. My mother, when she was in college between 1968 and 1972, was part of many peaceful protests against the Vietnam War. And I would urge the students at Middlebury, at UVM, at Dartmouth, everywhere, to look at those who are standing with them, because I truly do believe that the majority of the people in these encampments do have the best of intentions and do want to see peace in the Middle East. But there are wolves in sheep's clothing standing amongst them who are saying things like globalize the intifada from the river to the sea. We don't want no two-state. We want all of it. And what that says to the broader Jewish community, 90% of whom are Zionists, which means that we believe that Israel has a right to exist and Jews have a right to self-determination in our land of origin, that we feel unsafe, we feel physically threatened. I don't believe that our college students want that. And I call on them to make sure those who are in the camp saying these things that are actual calls for violence are told that is not welcome here.
Well, Rachel, thank you for calling in. We actually are going to speak to a couple of students on the ground at these protests very soon. Let's go to one right now. We have Adam in Shelburne. It looks like he's calling in, who participated in the encampment there at UVM. Adam, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm curious if you just heard that comment from Rachel, who's concerned about anti-Semitism that could come out of these protests and feelings that some Jewish students have of being unsafe on campus. What has your experience been being part of the protests at UVM?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess I want to start by clarifying that I am one of the media liaisons and contracts for, you know, stuff like this for the encampment, so I can kind of speak to the camp as a whole. But we've had conversations a lot with people that have come over to the encampment and have said that, you know, various slogans that we've included have made them feel unsafe. And, you know, I can say that as a Jewish student myself, who has been part of the encampment since last Sunday when it got set up. You know, I haven't seen anything that I would consider anti-Semitic. I have never been made to feel unsafe by members of the encampment. I have been made to feel unsafe and uncomfortable from, you know, police presence from the administration, but never from members of the encampment and, you know, protesters that come. So I do really disagree with, you know, with the assertion that, you know, the encampment or even some members of the encampment are saying things that are anti-Semitic or saying things that are, you know, making people unsafe.
Mm. All right. Well, Adam, thank you. We do have to go back to our guests before we have to take a quick break. Thanks so much for calling in. Linus, I see you writing feverishly over there. What are your thoughts listening to both Adam and our caller about this concern over safety of Jewish students in particular?
Well, I think I can speak from the experience at Middlebury and echo the point that Adam made that, as far as I know, that there has been no instances of this kind of behavior in the encampment on campus more generally. And recognize that, you know, the two things that Rachel says that are worth considering. One is there is always a risk when you stand up for something that the people on your side won't necessarily be the good guys. But there's also, I think, from us as audience or as citizens, we need to recognize and not allow that to be co-opted. We can't sort of, if we're worried about the wolves in sheep clothing co-opting the movement, then conflating the movement with those wolves is doing exactly that. And I think making that distinction is important. And I think the other thing is, and again, I think it's important that everyone on campus feels safe at all times. But I think we also need to recognize that, I mean, it was 6 months ago that three students were murdered in Burlington, Palestinian students.
They weren't killed.
Shot, I'm sorry.
They were shot.
Sorry.
Yep,
sorry. Radio fever. But were shot and killed. And so
they were not killed.
I'm sorry.
They were shot and injured. Three students.
Shot and injured. I am so sorry about that. They were shot. And so when we think about like who feels safe on campus, a lot of people feel unsafe. And there's also the question of, again, if you want to ask about echoes with the national debate that was going on 7 years ago around Charles Murray, there's a difference between being uncomfortable and feeling unsafe. And I think that, again, I don't want to minimize people's real feelings, but I also think there's a limit to what the student protesters can do in this larger context. And at some point, they have to be able to act in their along their politics and know that that may make people feel uncomfortable, but that's not this, but they don't necessarily, or they're not generating a feeling of unsafety on their own through their actions.
We got an email from Joanna in Middlebury who writes, I am not a student, but I am a supportive community member who has been visiting the encampment at Middlebury College every day to check in with students and make sure they have what they need. On Friday evening, we participated in a beautiful Shabbat ceremony with some of the Jewish students, as well as community members of Jewish Voice for Peace. One of the things we talked and prayed about in our circle on a tarp on the grass is the long history of anti-Semitism in Europe and how much trauma and suffering has resulted from the inability to view someone from a different culture as fully human. Let's dive into a bit more about what's been going on at the University of Vermont at its Burlington campus. On Friday, UVM announced that U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas Greenfield, would no longer be speaking at the commencement ceremony. The cancellation was one of the demands that student protesters had, but the university did not clarify if the cancellation was in direct response to those protesters' demands. Students also want the university to promise not to discipline protesters, which it has not agreed to yet. And in an email sent to the community, UVM's president wrote in part, while I am grateful to the students and university leaders who have engaged in conversation, I note that the demonstration has been continuously in violation of university policies since its inception. Now, joining us now from UVM is Noah Diedrich. He's the assistant news editor at the Vermont Cynic, a student newspaper at UVM. It's been covering the encampment in the middle of the Davis Center and Howell Library. Noah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, so the Syndic has been covering UVM's encampment protests. Tell us what you and your team have been seeing and hearing just in the past 24 hours or so.
In the past 24 hours, it's been relatively calm, I think, since, you know, UVM having released the list of funds that they invest in, as well as canceling Linda Thomas Greenfield as the speaker. I think, you know, that's pretty much meeting or, you know, getting close to meeting a lot of the demands. So, but, you know, they continue to chant and protest, and there's a protest coming up this afternoon. It's been largely kind of similar to what's been going on the past week.
And have there been any confrontations that you have witnessed or heard of at the encampment or on campus between pro-Palestinian protesters and students who disagree with that stance?
There definitely has been students who disagree with the protest around. I wouldn't call them confrontations. There's definitely been conversation from what I've seen. Some students have hung flags, signs with the Israeli flag on them, kind of around the encampment so the protesters can see. But I wouldn't call them confrontations. It's been pretty pretty civil.
Now, this is a really tricky topic for any newsroom to cover. What have the conversations been like among Syndic writers and editors about how to approach this coverage of the protests? Like, have you been looking to other student newspapers on how they cover it? How are you navigating this?
Yeah, this is definitely new territory for us. As far as I know, at least in my time at the Syndic, we've never done coverage like this. So initially, we did look to the Brown Daily Herald and also the Daily Trojan from USC, just to kind of get an idea of, you know, what this looks like, what other students have been doing, like what can we expect ourselves to do. But it's been it's pretty unprecedented. So we've had students step up and kind of people who don't usually write news are writing news, and people are taking time off between classes and studying for finals to cover and take pictures and get interviews. But it's been a little stressful, I think, but definitely exciting and I think valuable experience for everyone at the Syndic.
Yeah. And, I keep thinking about how the students who were protesting, who are protesting right now, have been through so much in the past couple of years, particularly with the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm just wondering how you think that experience has shaped the worldview of yourself, of other students. I don't want to ask you to speak for other students, but just if you've been reflecting on that in the last week or so.
I think so. I think I definitely think it shows how much students can contribute to larger conversations on their campus. And that, you know, they definitely do have say, and I think it's super valuable for students to make their voice heard, no matter, you know, who they agree with, what side they take. I think the value of student voices has definitely been a big trend for me.
Yeah. And what are you working on right now? What comes next?
We've been looking more into the names, you know, because UVM has released the names of the funds that they've invested in. We're working on, I think, a new series of stories that will delve deeper into that, how that works, what it looks like, and, you know, kind of what we can expect to see from that going forward.
Well, thank you. That's Noah Diedrich. He's the assistant news editor at the Vermont Syndic, the student newspaper at UVM. Noah, thanks so much for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
And I do want to reiterate here that we did reach out to the presidents of all the universities we're discussing directly on today's show, UVM, Middlebury, and Dartmouth College in Hanover. They have all released statements, but did not take us up on our request to join today's show. We are joined, though, by Linus Owens, a professor of sociology at Middlebury College. Linus, one thing I'd love to hear your thoughts on is this kind of broader context around today's protests in terms of like what students have lived through in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, every generation is a couple of major national or global events that really shape them. And current college students have been through quite a lot, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that during the pandemic that I guess on one hand, some people wanted to question the value of it, but for others, including myself, the value of it became even more apparent, which is this nebulous thing called the college experience, which is all the stuff that happens mostly outside the classroom, but I would think inside the classroom too. And the way in which that builds connections and a sense of solidarity, and not just in a political sense, but just, you know, community, because I think our sense of community, even at a small college like Middlebury, that in some ways is structured to create community, even when it's not there, has been under stress. You know, like we can't, you know, like we don't even share the same classroom for several years. We can't even read each other's expressions, all these sort of small things that add up. And so to me, in some ways, it's really frustrating always when we see this kind of repression of student protests. But in this moment in which social solidarity is thin on the ground and students are doing so much work to build it, both on campus, globally, with solidarity with the people of Gaza and Israel, and also across campuses across the country, right? Solidarity with their fellow protesters. And so for institutions to crack down on that, especially when I think Noah made a good point that from the public's coverage, often we think about it through the language of confrontation. And certainly we can find examples of it if we look, but more likely we actually find conversations happening. And I think that those conversations get lost in the spectacle of the conversation, of the confrontations. And so, and also to think about Joanna's point, like the kind of beauty and connectedness that people within the encampment feel and try to sort of share with people who pass by and walk by gets lost in that the coverage of these sort of deranged, out of control, angry, violent college students, which the people who have actually been in these places, it seems completely at odds with their own experiences.
Yeah. Well, one person who I know has been trying to have conversations with folks in the encampments is Matt Vogel, the executive director of UVM Hillel. It's a campus organization that promotes Jewish life and culture. I spoke to him earlier this morning. He said he's been going to the encampment, going by it every single day for the last week or so since it's been up at UVM. He said he hopes the administration takes down the encampments and said that he is hearing from students who feel unsafe on campus. So let's take a listen here to just a bit of our conversation.
Yes, I've heard from students who are in the encampment concerned about their safety, staying out overnight and with people coming in and out of an open campus. I've heard from students that are afraid to walk into the library, and there is discrimination being based on people's shared ancestry happening at this university right now. And again, it's an opportunity for the UVM to uphold their own policies to protect all students.
What was your reaction to the news from late last week that the commencement speaker was canceled?
I think it's a missed opportunity for our UVM community to be able to learn from someone with a significant amount of direct experience and listening and learning to a wide range of people.
What in the next coming days are you watching for? What do you hope happens this week?
I hope students are able to study on for their finals. I mean, this is what they're working for their entire careers. It's why their parents and they and grandparents and families are spending thousands of dollars in tuition to send them to university. They want to make a difference in the world. And some students feel like they're making a difference in the world through gathering in front of the Davis Center. And some people are looking to graduate and be able to celebrate this moment with their families. So over the next few days, I hope that UVM will be able to enact their policies and that we be able to finish the year off with everyone feeling safe and supported by this UVM community.
Linus Owens, a professor at Middlebury College. Curious what your thoughts are there from what you're hearing at UVM. Very different schools in some respects, but also so close. Many, many students part of the same Vermont community.
Well, I agree with Matt's point that the university has a responsibility to all its students and to have them feel safe and be protected. And I think that we can turn that back around to the point made earlier. Was it Adam, who's experiencing disciplinary action? And we can think about, you know, Dartmouth clearly did not have a commitment to the safety of its students. And so I think that there's ways to have people feel safe, or at least as safe as possible, but still allow for these kinds of protests and disagreements to happen. And the thing that I think is interesting, again, from a social science point of view, is across the country, we have a relatively similar tactic being employed by students, but wildly different responses by institutions. And to think about like what is motivating those institutions to respond in the ways that they do, that's a whole another show, I'm sure. But I do think that the institutions that have taken the students seriously have not only sort of made a stronger community, but actually come out better than the others that crack down in all kinds of ways, both in terms of PR, but also in terms of the institution itself and the long-term safety and belonging feeling of everyone who's part of that community.
Middlebury College sociology professor Linus Owens, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to close with one more email that we received during today's show from a listener named Zach, who writes, "Watching and studying all this protest activity takes me back to early childhood, when I was well aware of the peace movement taking place in our world at that time. The resulting police action is also similar, as is the reaction of college administrations. One has to wonder why official reactions are so slow to reflect our changing society. Whether or not we agree with the current cause or any other cause, we must respect the right to free speech within the boundaries of safe and peaceable enjoyment on campus for all students and faculty, free from any hate."